This is Let's Go Michigan with Jeff Sloan on 760 WJR. Your bird's eye view on Michigan's business and entertainment scene. Here's Jeff.
All right, welcome to Let's Go Michigan on a beautiful Michigan weekend. Kristen Kajawa, Mark Pastoria here co-hosting the show with me. Good to be with you guys as always. So at this point, kind of this midsummer point, kind of what it feels like. We've settled into summer. People have taken vacations, some road trips. We've had the 4th of July and so on.
It's that in-between time. I'm not ready to gear up for school.
That's right. Still summer.
And I've passed 4th of July, so.
We're in that in-between kind of middle time between the start and end of summer. Anybody want to punch the brakes and just wish we could just slow down right here,
always.
Right now? Yeah, always. Right. Just goes too fast. Well, enjoy every minute of it. And speaking of that, many people are. They're enjoying it by traveling, of all things. Of course, a lot of domestic travel, but a lot of international travel, too. And we've got a list to share, this one by Bloomberg, of some of the hot spots that Americans are really pursuing their travel plans in and to this summer.
Around the world.
Right, exactly. And not constrained by just heading, you know, 50 miles down the road or even just sticking nationally.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
A lot traveling internationally this year. We've got some highlights. Kristen, I know you've had a chance to peruse the list and dream a little bit mm-hmm. about future or even maybe current destinations that are on the roadmap for you. Want to share a couple of standouts from this list that really got your attention?
I mean, maybe I'll ask for a raise and I can hit every place on this list.
Right. Well, you're gonna need a raise from somebody else other than me to hit some of these places on the list. I'll tell you that. Wow. And that's actually one of the themes. You know, Americans are spending money on their vacations. Boy, I'll tell you, they are definitely willing to go all out on many of these vacations. So to kick things off, you know, domestically, Boston's a hot spot. Boston is always a perennial hotspot, of course, a great bastion of history here for the United States and great city to visit.
Also domestically, Aspen and Las Vegas made the list.
Can't beat either of those two. I think actually Las Vegas may be the top destination, I think, for travel.
Oh, interesting.
You know, you would expect New York, obviously, to be high on that list and so on. But mm-hmm. internationally, I'll tell you a place that has really come up in reputation and really come onto the scene. If you're looking for a beach vacation, Dominican Republic. It's got really hot resorts now that qualify as luxury resorts at a price that is generally more affordable than other tourist destinations, yet with all the amenities and, you know, a lot of them are all-inclusive, for example, and offer everything you need to have that vacation where we talked about, you literally, that's that do-nothing vacation, which sounds so good right about
that's,
now.
That's yeah. great.
Actually, it always sounds good. Who are we kidding? When you got kids, you know, the do nothing always sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Aspen. Of course, Aspen's great summer or winter.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah, hiking in the summer. Yep. A lot of people think Aspen, they think skiing. It's great in the summer, too.
It's great in the summer also.
Beautiful.
Another one that's made the list, and I've actually had a few people I know have marked this off their bucket list, was doing a safari
Ooh.
In Kenya.
Incredible. I mean, that's one of those bucket list, you know, kind of once in a lifetime
it was theirs
kind
too.
Of things. That's an unusual yet, you know, kind of over-the-top experience mm-hmm. that is so memorable.
And now is the time to go because June through September is their mild weather season. So yeah. if you were still planning, if you can pull together a last-minute trip.
Yeah. One region or one country that really stood out for me that I'd really like to get to know the culture better and experience the culture more and so on, Argentina.
Oh,
a lot
yeah.
of people going to Argentina right now and picking that as their place to go to this summer. Boy, that sounds good to me. The food's incredible. Hotels and resorts, second to none. So a little dreaming doesn't hurt. Speaking of all that dreaming, actually, when I say a little dreaming doesn't hurt, it can hurt. It can hurt you in the pocketbook. And speaking of that, when you dream big, when it comes to travel, a lot of younger people are making travel a major priority in their lives. So much so that not only are they spending every last dollar on their summer travel plans, but they're actually willing to go into debt to finance their travel plans over the summer. 40% of Gen Z and millennials say they're going to prioritize summer travel over other financial choices that they could make this summer. It's that important to them. And a quarter anticipate almost going $2,000 in debt across the summer as a result of their summer travel.
So they may be taking out an additional credit card just to make that dream come true.
That is exactly right. That additional.
Mark, your son travels all the time.
He loves to travel.
Yeah.
And he books way in advance, so he saves a lot of money.
Oh, good.
Is he the kind of traveler that's pursuing new culture, new experiences, new places generally, or is it more You know, is there either a reason to go to the destination or is it just a kickback resort?
He likes the cultural aspect of it.
Yeah, that's very cool. Well, speaking of heading overseas, how about this? How about heading to Paris? The Olympics Paris this summer.
I don't think we can get a ticket now.
You can't get a ticket, but you could certainly be in the midst of those who did get a ticket to go. And I'll tell you another thing. We can't end the show. We'd be remiss if we didn't end the show. Speaking of the Summer Olympics in Paris, without recognizing a few Michiganders that are not only going, but going to represent us as Olympians.
So exciting.
In the Olympic Games that are just around the corner now in Paris. How cool is that? Michigan's proud to be sending some on the Team USA, including Michigan State star Heath Baldwin, who took first place in the decathlon at the U.S. track and field trials. Grand Blanc's Grant Fisher qualified by winning the 10,000 meters. Michigan Wolverine Abby Tamer was named to the U.S. Olympic team on the field hockey team. And Ann Arbor native Hobbs Kessler finished third to make his way onto the Olympic team and to now be headed to Paris as well. Congratulations to them all. Can you imagine being part of the Olympic team that marches out onto that field or arena or stadium to represent your country, wearing the colors of your country, to be an Olympian? I just think, you know, there's so many things you can do in life, but so few that rise to that level. Wow. If you're an athlete, boy, that is the top of the mountain. How cool is that?
Absolutely.
All right. Very cool. Congratulations to them. And before we run to a break, Kristen, give us a little bit of a highlight on what we can expect coming up in the show today.
Guys, later in the show, we are going to talk about people who are definitely not going to the Olympics. We're going to be talking about the people who don't like to exercise.
Oh, that's kind of the other side of
that's the opposite.
Right, that is the other extreme.
We're going to understand the psychology behind why we don't like to exercise.
By the way, was there any reason why you glanced at me when you introduced introduced that? Okay,
no.
just checking. Not that I feel like it's relevant
it's
in any way.
It's not directed
really,
at you
but,
at
right.
all.
But
no.
just, okay, just checking.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
And then also, there was a phenomenon about the correlation between baseball and climate change.
Ooh.
And what that is all about. And I think, Mark, you might be able to chime in on that. Also, we have two really good interviews about our favorites, the baby boomers, and how they are keeping the economy alive, as well as some of the ways that they are going to be able to take advantage of AI.
All right.
So, packed show.
Interesting stuff. Great stuff ahead. Hope you stick with us right here on Let's Go Michigan. Back with more right after this break.
Welcome back to Let's Go Michigan with Jeff Sloan on WJR. Once again, with a 5,000-foot view of Michigan business and events, here's Jeff Sloan.
All right, welcome back to Let's Go Michigan. Kristen, Mark, I don't think there's any of us that need to be reminded of or informed of the importance and the need of exercising. We all buy that, right? That's a good, I mean,
or
right?
You just look in the mirror every day and you're reminded of
okay. Oh, no. Well, that's, yes, thanks for the
thanks,
reminder.
Dave, thanks a lot.
Sorry.
But look, I think the reality is there's no arguing the point that it's good for you.
No, it is good for you. It's good for your mental health, too.
Good
We've
for
talked
mental health,
a lot about
physical
that.
Health, keeps the weight off. You got to exercise, right?
Yeah.
Here's the problem. Many Americans just don't like to exercise. You have friends or people that you hear say, I love going to the gym. I can't wait to get there.
My son does that.
Really? He loves it.
Every day.
People love it. But then there's some of us. And those are the people we're looking out for today.
Yeah. We're talking to you.
There's some of us that in spite of just knowing that it's so good for you, in spite of even wanting to do it and buying into it, I have no argument. I don't really like it. Okay. Well, I have good news for those of us that don't like it. We're not alone. Actually, many Americans just don't like to exercise. Why? We're about to find out. We've got Jamie Ducharme from Time Magazine. She's a health correspondent there. And she's covering this very question. So actually learning that there's now research that supports the fact that some of us, many of us, in fact, just don't like to exercise. Jamie, this is a real thing. Some people just don't like to exercise, right?
People do not. And I was interested in this just because, you know, I'm a health reporter and it has always struck me that if there is anything that is good for people in many ways, many aspects of their health, and actually pretty easy to do just from the standpoint of, you know, you don't actually need a ton of equipment or time to exercise, it seems like something that people would be doing all the time. And yet everyone kind of struggles to find the motivation to do it. So I was interested in just digging into that question of why is it so hard to get yourself to exercise?
Well, we want to hear about that. Before we get to that, though, you said really nearly everyone doesn't want to exercise, but there are those really annoying people that love to get their running shoes on and get their workout gear on and get out there and go all day long.
Are they annoying or are they just very motivated?
I'm kidding, of course.
No,
I'm really jealous. Yeah. I wish I felt that way.
Right.
I know intellectually it is so good for you to exercise. It is the answer. It's the answer to better quality of life, more life, longevity, all the rest of it. We all know that. But yet, for me to, and I do it at some level. Now, the good news is it keeps, Jamie, I think, correct us if we're wrong, but the kind of the threshold of what's acceptable in order to achieve just some baseline objectives keeps coming down. It used to be that you had to go out and run 2 hours a day. You know, it's no longer that. It's much more approachable and, you know, achievable, right, Jamie?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the federal guidelines on this say that you should shoot for around 150 minutes of exercise a week, which breaks down to about 20 minutes a day. But there's some really interesting research that shows even if you're getting significantly less than that recommended amount, it is still good for you. So it's truly one of those habits where even a tiny, tiny bit is good for you. And yet, getting back to the original topic, and yet people still, many people at least, find it very difficult to find the motivation to do that.
Okay, well, we got to know why.
I was fascinated in this. It goes back to human evolution. You know, for most of human existence, we had to be very active to survive, to find food, grow food, outrun predators, like just truly to stay alive. So we evolved to tolerate that level of activity, but also to look for moments when we could rest and kind of conserve energy for the times when we really needed it. If you fast forward to the modern day, most of us are not hunting or gathering our own food and moving around that much, but we still have that kind of biological instinct to conserve energy. So this feeling of like, ugh, I'd rather be on the couch or sleeping than going to the gym is actually something that's hardwired into our brains.
Interesting. So at least we have that going for us.
I was going to say, I'm going to say that next
right.
time.
I'm hardwired.
Hardwired.
Right. What are we supposed to do here? Right.
I mean, when you think about when you look around, I mean, many of us sit at our desk for 8 hours a day. We take an elevator. We take an escalator. Things that you would think are more physically active, like cleaning your home. We have dishwashers instead of washing the dishes. We have provided ourselves with ways to not exercise.
Exactly. One of the scientists that I interviewed for this story made the point that this instinct that we have to conserve energy is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just that we have become so efficient in modern life at carrying out all the various things that we need to do that we no longer have really, most people at least, any built-in movement. So the instinct has gotten to a point where it's actually harming our health and we kind of have to find ways to get around it and convince ourselves to move.
And so are there any tips to help someone get in the right mindset and get over this hump of just not wanting to do it? I do know this. I have found in my own experience, it's really hard to get started. But interestingly, once you do get started, it's kind of hard not to do it. Like I know that from time to time when I've gotten into a really significant exercise regimen across some meaningful period of time, I start to get a dopamine rush when I did it and I look forward to it. Tell us, what did you learn about some ways that we can kind of, sounds silly to say, but trick our brains into wanting to do this?
Yeah, not at all silly. And I think the first one is the simplest, which is just being aware that this is how your brain works and not beating yourself up about it. Because so many people feel guilty or are shamed when they don't exercise and they start to feel like something's wrong with them, when in reality, like this is how human brains have evolved to work. So that's thing one, don't feel guilty about it. Thing two is, to your point, just making it part of your daily life in whatever way works for you. One tip that an expert told me that I really resonated with was to combine exercise with something that you either already have to do or that you like to do. So maybe that's, you know, instead of going out to dinner with your friend, you go for a walk in the park with a coffee. Or maybe if you have to have a meeting at work anyway, you don't do that in the conference room where everyone's sitting down. You do that again while maybe walking. And that just makes it so much easier to find sort of the time and the mental energy to do this.
And we only need 20 minutes now.
And that it keeps coming down. I told you.
Right.
Just wait another couple years.
That's right.
It's going to be maybe down to 10. Right. No, more is better. That's right.
But yeah, right. 20 minutes a day, if you think of it that way, at least to me, that doesn't sound quite as daunting.
Well, I have to admit, I picked up some good tips from Jamie through this conversation. But I also have to tell you guys, listen, I picked up another thing. If on a particular day, I just can't get moving. It just doesn't appear. Listen, I'm hardwired. What do you want from me? I really grabbed hold of that one.
Yeah,
I'll tell you. It's not my fault. I'm hardwired. Right.
I know you're joking, but I do actually think there's value in not beating yourself up. I mean, we're all humans. We're doing the best we can. We live in a modern society that is not built for encouraging exercise. And most people are really busy and working sedentary jobs or working multiple jobs. So I think we have enough to feel bad about. And this is one thing that we can maybe release a little bit.
All right. Right on, Jamie Ducharme, health correspondent at Time Magazine. Thanks so much. Why you don't want to exercise. A few tips on how to trick yourself into actually wanting to exercise and doing it. Really appreciate it, Jamie.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for being on. Stick with us here on Let's Go Michigan. Back with more in a minute.
Welcome back to Let's Go Michigan with Jeff Sloan on WJR. Once again, with a 5,000-foot view of Michigan business and events, here's Jeff Sloan.
All right, welcome back to Let's Go Michigan. How cool is that, guys? That's got a ring to it. We're excited about doing this show now on a Saturday afternoon. Of course, we used to do, in effect, a version of the show early in the morning. Now happy to be in the 1 p.m. time slot on Saturdays. All right, now, Mark, I have to ask you. You were a baseball player, right, when you were younger?
At one time, yeah.
Right. Do you remember back in the day?
Back in the day. It was a long time ago.
Could you swing the bat pretty well?
I was okay. I could hit the ball. Not far. I could run, though.
Yeah, I'll bet you could run. I remember that. You were a wide receiver as a football player, too. You could run.
I tried.
But let me ask you this. Did you ever hit a home run?
Inside the park.
Okay, inside the park. Well, you've hit the ball far. Right? I mean, at times. Absolutely. Maybe that wasn't, maybe you were more of a base hit kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And use your speed to get around the bases. But you've had that feeling, that crack of the bat, that sweet spot when the ball's coming in fast and hot and you connect with it just perfectly and the thing sails.
Nothing like it.
Nothing like it, really, right?
Right, yeah.
Well, let me tell you, there's more of that nothing like it going on in baseball today than ever before. A lot of home runs being hit. A lot of home runs. In fact, they expect this year to be a record year in home runs. So what could be driving more home runs? Well, now a study, and we were fortunate to be able to catch up with the guy who covered the study in Science News, Darren Incorvia, published an article in Science News that made clear that this is tied to, of all things, global warming. And now they're beginning to prove that because, Mark, you remember this, when it's hot outside, it's a hot day, the ball seemed to travel further, right, when you did it?
For sure.
Okay, so for sure. So there we go. Well, now you're getting more hot days in any given day, an average higher temperature due to global warming and climate change. And so the ball is traveling further, and more home runs are being hit. Well, as I said, I caught up with Darren Incorvia from Science News, and he had this to say about it. Here's my interview with Darren. Everyone knows about the impact global warming is having on our lives these days and really affecting everything in our lives. And now it seems that even our beloved sport of baseball could in fact be affected by global warming as well. Really? Yes, indeed. Darren, could global warming really be impacting baseball? Your report indicates that it is, right?
Well, yeah, that's right. We're absolutely seeing climate change affect a lot of things that we maybe wouldn't expect right off the bat. And now that includes baseball.
Unbelievable. And how has it affected baseball?
Well, it turns out that increased air temperatures caused by global warming and climate change has actually led to an increase in the number of home runs that batters are hitting.
And that happens because why? When it's warmer outside, the ball itself, due to physics involved here, tends to go further in warmer temperatures than in cooler ones?
That's exactly right. Some fundamental physics is at play here, where in warmer air temperatures, the air density is lower, which reduces the resistance on the ball as it's flying through the air. So a ball hit at the same angle and same speed in a warmer day will travel further than it would if it was hit in a colder day.
Okay, got it. And so speaking practically as it relates to the game of baseball, give us some support for this from, I understand, 58 more home runs each MLB season from 2010 to 2019.
That's right. That's the average number of extra home runs we're seeing between 2010 and 2019 because of this effect, which is a small effect compared to other things that have also led to the increase in home runs recently, but it is a statistically significant effect that we're seeing.
And so how do they know that they can tie the difference in home runs to the fact that it has to do with the temperature? It could have to do with so many other variables. How do they know it's this?
Well, this is where the kind of obsession with statistics in baseball really pays off, because there are so many different numbers and statistics collected for the sport of baseball that we often think of as being put to use for, you know, strategy, right? If you've seen the movie Moneyball or read the book Moneyball. But in this case, researchers were able to use all of that data combined with some climate data and some climate modeling to determine the effect between temperature and home runs. So they looked at over 100,000 baseball games going back to the 1960s and looked at over 220,000 individual batted balls using the system of high-speed cameras that is in each stadium. And so they're able to gather incredibly fine detail on the sport of baseball on each individual game. And that's how they were able to tell that there's an effect. So it's really a unique thing about baseball.
Yeah, because the numbers, the data is there for people to dive into. And when you refer to they did this and they did that, is that Christopher Callahan of Dartmouth College?
That is absolutely correct. Christopher Callahan and the rest of the team at Dartmouth led this research.
Okay. And I guess one of the good things here is that, you know, this is the kind of change that affects everyone, presumably equally and evenly, right? I mean, it's not like it's favoring one team or the other, is it?
No, it's not favoring one team or the other. As part of this big analysis that Christopher Callahan and his fellow researchers did, you know, they were able to control for the team and the stadium, and across all of that, you see this effect of more home runs and higher temperatures. One thing that did actually limit the effect is if the game was played in a stadium with a dome while the dome was covering the stadium.
That's interesting.
So you are able to mitigate this effect if you put a dome over the stadium.
And it tracked fewer home runs, presumably, in the domed stadium than those outdoors, because you're not having the increase in temperature.
Yes, essentially, if it's a hotter day, you'll see this effect of that temperature on home runs in an open stadium, but you wouldn't see that effect in a dome stadium. Yeah, because it controls the climate a little more within the game.
But maybe in the early spring or late fall, you might be able to actually underscore the study by showing that inside the stadium, where it's relatively warmer than it might be in certain cases outside, you could probably see more home runs inside.
Yeah, you know, that very well could be. I think that relationship between air temperature and home runs would hold up going the opposite way. Yeah,
exactly. And that probably helps to absolutely make the case. Well, baseball is such a game of numbers, and it's fun to track. Mm-hmm. And as I say, the interesting thing about this is it doesn't favor one team or the other. It's not like it's a thing about home teams or away teams and so on. Although, you know, there are places where there are warmer climates versus cooler climates, even in the heat of the season, that still is the case. And so I would imagine there's a difference there. Hitters must love it. Pitchers must hate it. All right.
I think that's fair to say.
All right. Darren Incorvia, thank you so much. Science News, interesting stuff. You know, I don't know about you guys, but it seems climate change is tied to everything these days, right?
Isn't it? Yeah.
Even baseball. There we go. The ball's traveling further.
I want to get back in there. Maybe I'll hit a home run with this climate change. Maybe, bring it on.
Right. Maybe you'll make it over the wall this time, Mark.
Well, I'm hoping climate change is going to help our Tigers.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I don't think anything's going to help those guys.
Oh, you guys.
We need an ice age.
Yeah, we've got an ice age when it comes to the Tigers right now, unfortunately. All right, headed to a break. Back with more in a minute right here on Let's Go, Michigan.
Welcome back to Let's Go, Michigan with Jeff Sloan on WJR. Once again, with a 5,000-foot view of Michigan business and events, here's Jeff Sloan.
All right, welcome back to Let's Go Michigan. Of course, Kristen, Mark here with me. Look, guys, American consumers are spending significantly still. And so we want to know who's doing all that spending. And one demographic that might be outspending others just may be the baby boomers. Court Gaines is here from BusinessInsider.com. He just published a story in Business Insider, Baby Boomers are spending their nest egg and lifting the U.S. economy. Cork Gaines, he's an economy analyst at Insider. Cork, what in the world is going on here? Against all what seems logic and everything else, you'd think spending would pull back. Costs are higher on nearly everything. Inflation certainly a major factor. Yet there seems to be no end to consumer spending. Give us at a high level what's going on and how boomers may be doing a disproportionate share of that spend.
So basically, the economy is just in a weird place right now, and it has been for a while. And so, you know, we have all these bad things happening, but people are still spending their money. We had this past summer where people were coming out of their cabin fever status during the pandemic, and all of a sudden they wanted to get out and they wanted to spend money. They wanted to go to places. They wanted to go to Taylor Swift shows, Beyonce concerts. They wanted to go to movies. They wanted to do all these experiences and things like this. And there was some concern that that would slow down, but we're still seeing people spending money. And one of the things that we're seeing is that baby boomers, there's a lot of them, and they're sitting on a lot of money, and they seem to have this attitude right now that they are immune to kind of these bad headwinds that are happening right now in the economy. They're kind of immune to it, and you know, they're out there spending their money and having a good time. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we were kind of worried when this all started, when we knew this baby boomer generation was coming, that you know, they would, one, all retire at the same time and stop contributing to the economy, and two, they would kind of sit on their money and be scared to spend it. And we're seeing both of those things end up being not true. Some of them are still working. Some of them not by choice, but others are still working by choice. And they have a lot of money and they seem to be kind of like in this, hey, I'm living for today attitude. And they don't have to worry about the economy the same way younger people do.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And you mentioned the economy's in this weird place. I think even the most renowned experts, those with great experience in trying to figure out where we are, where we're headed, you know, are struggling to understand or prognosticate whether we're headed for a recession or a soft landing. And there's kind of good news and bad news when it comes to baby boomers spending. We need them to spend in order to avoid a recession, but the spending also keeps inflation up, doesn't it?
It does. And that's kind of the conundrum, right? You know, ultimately, if we want to get inflation back down to 2%, which is what the Fed is aiming for, we need to reel in that spending. Americans just aren't doing that. In fact, we just saw even more numbers this week where retail sales are up. And on those day-to-day things, people are spending. Now, maybe this is just Americans kind of adjusting to what might just be a new norm. Everything has been wacky and changing for like the last 5 years now, or yeah, I guess not that long, 3-4 years now, that maybe this is just the way things are going to be for a little while, and we're just going to adjust to it and live our lives and hope it gets better a little bit down the road. But in the meantime, yes, spending is not going to help inflation. Inflation is going to stay high, and we're already seeing that a little bit with inflation kind of getting sticky and hovering a little bit higher than we'd like right now. But all that means really in the long run, hopefully, is that the Fed just does this longer for higher with the interest rates instead of raising them again. Maybe they just keep them level for, you know what, the next 6, 8, 9 months or something like that, and hope that other things catch up besides consumer spending. Consumer spending, bringing that back would have been nice short term. But long term, there are other ways. We can bring it back with borrowing, you know, curbing borrowing, you know, whether that's mortgages or business loans or whatever it is, and bringing those back down. And then maybe that will bring inflation down. It'll just take longer.
Yeah, and boomers, let's review again. What is it about the boomer generation that makes them able to spend so freely when others are so strained and constrained at this point due to the economic factors facing them? I mean, certainly boomers have less debt they're dealing with now, but as a generation, I think they were better savers. Now they've got this cash available to them. Are those some of the factors, and what are others?
Yeah, they have less debt. You know, they're not as worried about student loans as younger people are. They're heavily invested in their real estate. They've taken huge advantage of these soaring housing prices recently. It's just building their wealth and building their wealth and building their wealth. Meanwhile, a lot of them are free and clear on their mortgages and don't have to worry about that. And the ones that do have mortgages, they're probably locked into the 3%, 3.5% and are not worried about those higher interest rates that are out there right now. And they don't have to worry about that because while younger people may be forced to move for jobs or for family or whatever, older people can just hunker down and stay where they are for the most part. I mean, there's always exceptions, but a lot of them are just like, hey, you know, I have this house. I have a 3.5% mortgage rate. Why should I move and get a higher interest rate? So I'm just going to sit here and enjoy this. And they're living high off the hog right now. And plus, they have lived a good portion of life while they've gone through a few bad economies. For the most part, the economy has grown and grown and grown. And they're sitting on about $75 trillion worth of worth right now. You know, net worth. And that's a lot of money and they're using it freely.
Yeah. So they have all of this financial ammunition, if you will, that they can deploy into the economy to keep us from perhaps avoiding a recession, maybe getting into a soft landing as a result of their spending. The other thing is they have time on their hands, right? Many of them retired and now they have time on their hands. What's one of the things that people love to do when they've got time on their hands, for better or for worse? Buy things, right? Go out and spend, go shopping.
Yeah. I mean, and they may have had cabin fever just as much as the rest of us during the pandemic, where now, you know, hey, and they've got the free time and now they can finally start using it. They're going to go take cruises. They're going to go on vacations. They're going to go to Europe. They're going to travel the country, get, you know, buy RVs or whatever it might be. And they're going to go out and have a good time and enjoy themselves while they're doing it.
Yeah. And that against the backdrop, of course, as I mentioned, and as you've mentioned in your article, of everyone else kind of pulling back right now. This is kind of the counterbalance to younger generations facing real economic challenges. Some, of course, just making ends meet. And it's a real dichotomy. This is a true story of the haves and have nots, those that are spending, those that can't, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, there's always going to be a part of the American economy, for better or worse. And at the end of the day, we are still seeing some pullback in the spending, right? We're seeing high-end products at places like Costco or Best Buy, you know, high-end electronics. Maybe they're not buying those as much. We're definitely going to be seeing a slowdown in the housing market. But things like that, you know, some of the higher-end stuff, people are going to pull back on, which just kind of suggests to me that people are being cautious, but they're not terribly worried. They think, okay, and at the end of the day, for younger people especially, they still have jobs, right? You know, as long as they have jobs, they're going to still live their lives day to day. And maybe they get cautious a little bit, but, you know, they're still going to live their lives day to day. And as long as they have their jobs, they're going to keep spending.
All right, right on. Baby boomers now responsible for 22% of all spending. According to the Labor Department survey, Cork Gaines, economy analyst at Insider.com. We appreciate you very much. Thanks for enlightening us and making us aware of just a little slice of what's going on in the economy, is frankly maybe a little sliced or having major outcome on where we are and where we're headed with this head scratcher of an economy these days. That's for sure. Cork, thank you.
It's certainly not boring, but thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Indeed, we really appreciate it. All right. Staying on the subject of older people in their retirement years choosing to either go back to work or choosing to stay. Some even, by the way, thinking about starting a business of their own, getting employed that way, if you will. But nonetheless, this is really interesting, Kristen. You had the opportunity to do an interview with Jacob Zinkula. He's with BusinessInsider.com. And I find this fascinating. Older workers with people skills could actually thrive during the AI boom. Of course, we all know AI represents a big threat to people. I know Morgan Stanley just came out with a report indicated $4.6 trillion over the next 3 years could be the impact on the labor force, people losing their jobs to AI-driven alternatives, but not so fast.
That's right, Jeff. AI is not going to be taking everybody's job. In particular, older workers and people with soft skills are still going to be in demand, even though the threat of AI is looming. Here's my conversation with Jacob.
I've been able to speak to a lot of different AI experts, and we're asking them, you know, the question everyone wants to know about, like, what is going to happen to jobs in the future, who could be impacted. And I spoke with this one expert, an economist from Oxford, Carl Benedict Frey, and a point he made that I thought was interesting was that he said that people who can make their presence felt in a room and that are really good at in-person interactions and are able to, like, forge relationships and motivate in their jobs could thrive in the age of artificial intelligence in the future. And the kind of the thinking behind that is that in the years ahead, AI could automate and replace certain online tasks, but in-person interactions are, of course, harder to replace. So his thinking was that older workers, many of whom have a lot of experience in the workforce and have kind of cultivated these business relationships, that those will provide them valuable skills and tools that are not so easy to replace. And some of it's also that they're just will be more likely to be in certain managerial roles, for instance, that kind of place more emphasis on some of these overseeing teams and in-person interactions and things of that nature. So that's kind of the general thinking that he had. Whereas younger workers, perhaps, you know, they're newer to the workforce, they might be less able to utilize some of these social skills and, like, kind of networks that older workers have had the opportunity to build.
Right. The whole idea of soft skills, or I think it's now called executive skills, older workers, Gen X, baby boomers for sure, you're right, just because of their years of experience working in groups, working in teams, working in customer service, they have the skills, hopefully, to be able to communicate with people and in face-to-face situations, where somebody who doesn't have that much experience, like a Gen Zer, they might be able to use AI and take advantage of AI, but just because of their lack of experience in a workforce, they might not have those skills.
Yeah, another way AI, some experts think, could impact it is that it could increase certain competition in the workforce, enable a lot of people to do things well. For instance, like AI can help with certain writing, for instance, people like coding. I mean, there's a lot of different things that it could impact jobs, skills that it could help people do in the years ahead.
Yeah, it gives you a competitive edge.
Yeah, those things are always important. It's more difficult to have some of these soft skills. That's not something that you can just kind of snap your fingers and have.
Right. AI definitely has its advantages. There's a lot of room within lots of different industries for us to take advantage of it and for it to be a benefit and not a scary thing and not that it's coming for our jobs.
Yeah, I think so. Like speaking with, you know, experts, I think generally no one knows for sure what's going to happen, but a lot of them are generally optimistic that jobs aren't just going to be wiped out like 100 years from now. Who knows what's going to happen, right?
Right.
But that generally there's optimism that a lot of people will be able to use AI to be more productive and that there could be positive impacts in that sense. So I think kind of like the doom and gloom scenario, a lot of people are pushing back on. That said, there are certain jobs that AI probably will displace or eventually chip away at. And I guess the hope would be, you know, the counter to that is that, well, AI could also create jobs. And then it kind of gets back to like the people that unfortunately are displaced. Will they be able to find their way to these new jobs? But the hope is that that scenario, you know, while it will happen, might not be as super widespread as some people fear.
Right. I agree. I like that the fact that there's a positive twist, especially for older generations, that we can fall back on our soft skills or customer service that is just part of our growing up. That's part of how we've been placed in jobs and how we've conducted our employment and our careers. So there is hope. There's yes. Something good to fall back on. That makes me happy, and especially after COVID. I mean, people were thriving to have face-to-face communication. And if everything goes AI, again, there's a lot of positives to it. I still think that the idea of having face-to-face communication and being able to talk to somebody is going to be quite desirable.
Yes. And the one other point I would make is these soft skills will be very valuable for older workers. But that said, like, you know, experts I've spoke with, it will be very important for workers to learn how to utilize these AI tools. That's another way that they can have an advantage. I mean, the example with my coworker, they might be able to use an AI tool to do better at a task. Some people will be better at using these tools than others, and learning how to use them will be a way to kind of stand out, be more productive. And for older workers, I mean, some of these tools, they might seem a little intimidating at first, but some of them, like ChatGPT, for instance, it's complicated in some ways, but in other ways, some of these tools aren't that complicated.
No, it's essentially Alexa or Siri.
Yeah, I mean, there are deeper ways you can learn about how to get certain prompts out of them and like certain things they can do. It's not something that's just a tool that's just inherently like they would be incapable of figuring out because it's just so out there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, this is exciting. This is good. I like to have a positive twist on all of this doom and gloom around AI. It's good to hear something positive that will come out of this and that we can all kind of get our hands around. So thank you.
Yes, I hope so as well.
All right. Good news indeed. But Kristen, I have a question. Is it only older people that get this good news to be able to use their soft skills to offset the threat of AI?
Well, no. I think people in general that have been in the workforce should have honed their people skills or
there we
soft
go.
Skills.
Hone your people skills if you don't want to lose your job to AI. That's the moral of that story. All right. Well, guys, great doing the show together today. We're going to call it a wrap, right? Ready to head out into this weekend and enjoy it. Hope you all are doing the same. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend.